This is the recording of July 25, 2018, regular Board of Directors meeting to convene immediately following the Audit and Finance Committee meeting at the boardroom of Chugach Electric Association at 5601 Electron Drive, Anchorage, Alaska. Call to order the Board of Directors regular board meeting, and can you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call this evening. Present, we have Director Morse, Director Parks, Director Crawford, Director Henderson, and Director Reeves is out this evening. Maybe a little housekeeping. She has requested a excused absence for the evening, and I think we have to vote on that. It takes a majority vote, so all those in favor of approving an excuse absence for Director Reeves this evening, can you show of hands?
Sorry, say your question again, please.
All those in favor of excusing Director Reeves for absence from the board meeting this evening? Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. That's a little housekeeping. And we do need to designate someone to sign her expense report. Someone volunteer to do that?
I'd be happy to.
Okay. All right. And with that, so we have a safety minute.
Gina, do we have a couple slides?
Sorry about that.
All right. Good evening.
Good evening.
So our safety minute for the month is back safety, which is, it's a great timing for this safety minute because there have been nationwide an uptick of lower back injuries, mainly in the workplace. So I've got some statistics here about back injuries. So about 80% of adults are estimated to experience a back injury in their lifetime, with roughly 10% suffering a re-injury. More than 1 million back injuries are sustained in the workplace every year. Back injuries account for one in every five injuries and illness in the workplace, and 80% of these injuries are associated with manual material handling tasks. In the U.S., more than $50 billion is spent each year trying to treat back pain. And so if you just drive on Lake Otis, you'll know there's a lot of people making money off of back injuries because half of those clinics have something to do with the spine. And so I just wanted to look at the anatomy of the back. You can see that there's a lot of moving parts. One of the big things that I've learned over the years, and we've got the musculoskeletal system here, so you've got all the bones, you've got your spinal cord with your cervical spine, your thoracic, and your lumbar. One side, people have a lot of problems with the spine, but most of them are these soft tissue injuries that come from the muscles. And all of our muscles in our back are connected. And just for an example, I spend a lot of time in the car because I commuted to work from Palmer. I started having some lower back issues on my right side last year, and so I went to see my wellness doctor and found out it was actually because my calf was tight. So by stretching my calf, my back pain went away. But it just really showed me like how connected our muscles are, so you need to keep all your muscles loose. So in the workplace, we talked about 80% of the injuries are caused by material handling. And so one of the problems with people handling awkward loads is a lot of times they're kind of hinging on their back. So everyone's heard, lift with your legs and not with your back. Well, a lot of loads are too big to lift with your legs. So you can see the on the left here, lifting that object as a team is preventing back injuries. Lifting with your legs and not twisting, and don't hinge with your back. And then, you know, when you can use equipment, then use equipment. So we've got a lot of equipment around the company, such as dollies and carts and whatnot, that employees can use to move material rather than having to actually manually move it themselves. And we also have physical therapists come in once a year, talk to our linemen about preventing soft tissue injuries and ergonomics, you know, how to use your tools. In the line world, one of the things they is pretty common now for cutters and crimpers, they now use battery-operated ones, so you can just pull a button instead of having to, you know, crimp it with your arms. We had a lot of shoulder injuries until they came up with these new tools, so we're doing a lot to try to keep you know, the back injuries or any soft tissue injury down. So I brought with me today some foam rollers over here. And I don't know if you guys have used those before, but they really are good for working out your muscles. So if you got cramp or whatever, just bust out the foam roller. My only advice when rolling your back is to, you can roll your cervical spine, your thoracic spine, but not your lumbar spine. And then you can do your glutes with them as well. But the problem is, if you roll your lumbar spine, you don't have all the other bones connecting it, so you have a lot of soft tissue. And then you can actually move your spine and create more damage than good. But if you go on to YouTube, you can find all sorts of methods of rolling. You know, even your IT band and stuff after run feels great. So anyway, those are available for you if you wish to take them. Any questions? For sure.
Thank you. All right, thank you for that. We're going to move on to approval of the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda? Stan?
Motion to approve.
Second. Is there any discussion on the agenda?
Sure. I would like to see, just kind of looking under executive session, I'd just like, I apologize, I missed the operations committee meeting on Monday. It's an opportunity to just do a brief update on MLMP.
Okay. You good with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We will put that
item in.
Yeah. Okay. We'll put that sort of first. Item 9. Okay. And I had one thing too. I probably mentioned it in my update on APA, but we do have an opportunity to do a training class that's part of the APA annual meeting. We were invited to the APA annual meeting. And they are going to be doing one of the 900 level NRECA classes. It's coming up soon, August 22nd. So I had an email that got sent out to anyone. So it's in Fairbanks. So since it's coming up pretty soon, maybe we could just put that under the consent agenda. But it would be something that you'd have to sign up for pretty quickly if you're interested in going to that. So I just wanted to add that under training and conferences. Okay, is there any further discussion on the agenda?
Madam Chair, under executive session, I would like to talk about ARC-TEC discussion. Because we had a discussion in an executive session at ARC-TEC, but I'd like to report to,
okay,
to the board.
You want that, maybe?
And we can do that at the very end, it's fine.
Okay.
And then there was some discussion about executive session items, and we can take Battle Creek update out of executive session and put it up under new business if that's the desire.
It's
Oh, is it? I'm sorry. I must have an outdated version here.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Any other discussion? Okay. So So, do we want to revise the motion for approval of the agenda? Who was that?
Harry.
No. You accept those changes, Harry?
I accept those changes.
Okay. And with that, shall we take a vote on the agenda, approval of the agenda as amended? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda passes unanimously. Okay, so I think this evening we actually do have a few guests. I see about three guests in the audience, but I have just one, Mr. Roth, signed up to have member comments. So if you'd like to come up, that would be great.
Thank you for letting me take a few minutes to address the board. And for the record, my name is Mitchell Roth, and the service address is 139 Stowe Drive in Girdwood. I have some comments that I'd like to make concerning renewable energy following the recent Board of Directors election and campaign. And I'm going to try to keep this very brief, but there are some numbers in here, so I printed out copies so you can have them to look at. And with that, I'll try to stick to the script and make it fast. In the recently concluded Board of Directors election, I campaigned for Chugach Electric to adopt a goal of 100% renewable power generation and develop a plan to accomplish this goal. While I was unsuccessful in my bid to gain a seat at this table, I did receive the votes of nearly 2,000 members who presumably support maximizing the use of renewable energy as the only viable way to stabilize rates and lower the impact of fossil fuels on the environment. It's on behalf of these members that I come before you today. Although I strongly believe that my proposal is in the best long-term economic interests of all members of the cooperative. In my candidate statement, I said, while Chugach is moving in the right direction with projects like Bradley Lake, Fire Island, and Community Solar, I want to accelerate the transition to renewable energy sources with an ultimate goal of zero emissions and no rate increases. During the course of the campaign, I had the chance to meet with the board and interact with other members and employees. I was really surprised by the enthusiasm expressed for my statement because I expected more opposition from those people that have ties to the fossil fuel industry and those who simply didn't think it was possible to do in Alaska what the rest of the world is already doing. So in discussions with both supporters and skeptics of renewable energy, two questions were repeatedly raised. The first one is, what exactly does 100% renewable power generation mean? And the second was, how does Chugach get there? These are important questions, and that's what I'd like to briefly attempt to answer this evening. Let's start with the 100% renewable power generation. This implies 100% generation of power for some load. But what load are we talking about? Load demand varies minute to minute and month to month throughout the year. The average annual power generation is an accurate representation of the total power generated by Chugach each year. To achieve 100% renewable power generation means the total capacity of all renewable power generation sources equals or exceeds the average annual load. In simpler terms, it means that under best case conditions, renewable energy sources alone could meet the average demand and zero fossil fuels emissions would be achieved. Okay, in practice, this target is much easier to achieve than 100% zero emissions with all power all the time generated from renewables because of the best case assumptions that are built into this definition. The sun doesn't shine at night in most of Alaska, and the wind doesn't blow all the time, even in Girdwood. So the actual production of renewable energy sources will always be less than the total capacity. Also, peak power demand will, by definition, exceed the renewable capacity, and the shortfall will have to be supplied by fossil fuel generation until that time when renewable production equals or exceeds 100% of peak demand. And that still remains the long-term goal. To see what 100% renewable means for Chugach, I used data from the 2017 annual report to calculate the average annual load. Total power sales for 2017 were a very big number, 1,213,502 megawatt hours. So that's actually 1.2 trillion watt hours. Dividing by 365 days and by 24 hours gives an average annual load of 138 megawatts. And that's a key number in terms of this discussion. For Chugach to achieve 100% renewable power generation means access to a total renewable capacity of 138 megawatts. And all of you recognize that this is far less than the total capacity, the generation capacity that Chugach has available through the gas-fired turbines. And so it turns out that the 138 megawatt goal can be accomplished by the modest expansion of existing renewable sources. And so the following comments are just an outline of a plan that Chugach could achieve how Chugach could achieve 100% renewable generation. On a recent visit to the Chugach Dispatch Control Center, Bradley Lake was generating 40 megawatts, Eklutna Lake 20 megawatts, and Fire Island 10 megawatts. Together, these renewable sources were generating 70 megawatts, which is more than 50% of the Chugach average load. Think about that. We're almost 50% of the way there. The capacity of these three sources is considerably greater and far exceeds the Chugach average load, which is the 100% renewable target. Bradley Lake has a capacity of 120 megawatts. Eklutna Lake is 40 megawatts. Fire Island is 17 megawatts, for a total capacity of 177 megawatts in just three existing rail belt projects. Okay. Because Chugach owns different fractions of each of these projects, the Chugach share of the capacity is about, this is a very round number, 42 megawatts, and that does not include the 20 megawatt capacity of the Cooper Lake plant, which Chugach owns. The total capacity available to Chugach from these four projects totals about 62 megawatts, which is 45% of the average annual load. The significant conclusion here is that Chugach is currently almost at 50% renewable capacity, and that the renewable capacity from just three existing rail belt projects already far exceeds 100% of Chugach's average annual load. On top of this, the three projects that I've mentioned already have expansion plans, which are either under construction at Battle Creek, have engineering completed for Fire Island Phase 2, or are seeking utility and environmental and regulatory support and studies to proceed, which is the Eklutna pumped hydro. And in the present environment, there are multiple ways to reach and surpass the 100% renewable target. And this is the point that I'm trying to make, is that this is why Chugach needs a commitment to develop a 100% renewable plan, rather than to continue talking about we could do this or we could do that. The options are clearly there, and we're almost half the way there right now. The merger of Chugach with MLP offers a unique opportunity in the case of Eklutna Lake. Chugach, MLP, and MEA are equal partners in the Eklutna project. The merger of Chugach with MLP will give Chugach majority ownership in the project and place Chugach in a leadership role for the expansion of Eklutna Lake. And I believe the best way to proceed with this expansion would be the pumped hydro concept, which I believe we'll hear more about later in the meeting tonight. With respect to the merger, I urge Chugach management to carefully consider the implications and impact of financial decisions related to the merger on the ability to raise capital for future development of renewable energy resources. Up to this point, I focus solely on existing projects to make the point that renewable energy is already a significant and rapidly growing form of generation in the Rail Belt of Alaska. It's not a question of whether it can work in Alaska. It already is working in Alaska. The five cheapest utilities in terms of kilowatt hours all are based on renewable energy, and Chugach is not one of them. When you consider new projects such as wind farms in Cook Inlet or in the Tanana Valley, or residential and commercial solar projects, these are already in use throughout the world, and the question changes from can it work here to why aren't we doing this already? So, in closing, I strongly urge the board to adopt a goal of 100% renewable power generation and develop a plan for achieving this goal in 5 years or less. Okay? Thank you for listening. That's the end of today's lecture.
Comments? I'm going to open it up to the board members for comments or questions, and then we will discuss it. It's important. We appreciate your comments. Stuart, you have any comments?
No, I'm just trying to digest.
Yes, it's a bit to digest. Rachel, anything?
Thank you.
Harry?
Yeah, you know, I'm on the side of the line that says we need to accelerate our use of renewable energy. But I do have some questions about the numbers that you use here, because we don't get to run Bradley Lake all the time. We don't get to run Cooper Lake all the time. And certainly we only get about 33% of the use of Fire Island, which all are things that I you know, firmly believe in. But you know, I think what the number that we get for, you know, what our renewable source is about 12%, not 50. So I think we need to work on your assumptions here.
No, that's easy to explain. What 12% is actual generation. Mm-hmm. Which is what actually, where the energy actually came from. The key of, and the main reason why I wanted to come and address this question is that the definition I'm using for 100% renewable is based on capacity. Mm-hmm. It's not based on production. And I mentioned that a little bit, that in the second part when I said that when I was in the control center on that day, there was actually 70 megawatts online of generation
at that moment,
right? But the total capacities of all those different sources is actually 177, so it was less than half of the generation was less than half of the capacity. So the definition that I am using for 100% renewable refers to capacity, and it's not the goal of 100% generation.
Which is have 177 capacity on all the days of the year. I mean, most of those days.
Yes, your point is exactly well taken. And that's the point I wanted to clarify, is that this goal of getting to 100% renewable capacity, which is the best case assumption, if you did have the 177 megawatts on every day of the year, you know, we'd be more than there, but we don't. But this brings us to a point where the actual generation is going to be a significant, like 50% or more, of the production. And once we get to that point and moving forward, my belief is that we will see the benefits of continuing to move in this direction and accelerate the development, because economically, when you don't have 40% of your utilities revenue stream going to buy fuel, the rates come down. It's a question of how do we get there, how do we convert that huge revenue stream that's paying for fuel into renewable energy, which will be cheaper and sustainable and really break up the whole model of energy production.
Thank you.
So.
Mr. Roth. Mr. Anderson, do you have any comments or quick questions? We're going to move on and the board will take this up. Well, I think it's great that you've come in and taken the time and the effort to try to explain some of this. And I think from my perspective, I do think a member has come in and has asked us to consider doing something. And I think the board needs to have a conversation about it, that it's definitely, you know, a passionate thing. It's not anything we don't want to pursue, as you found out, you know, I think over time. And, you know, maybe that's we stand up a committee so that we can do more work on this. And I think we just need to have a discussion about it, about your request and what we want to do and move this forward. And maybe a committee process is the way to do that. So we'll take it up, I think.
Do you
have any comments?
No, I really appreciate you explaining how you arrive at 100% renewable, because it's, you know, when we look at capacity, it's the peak capacity during the year, and, you know, 100% would be all 1.2 million megawatt hours, you know. So I'm glad you explained how you got to 100%, because I think it's, that is probably a lot more doable than, you know, getting rid of all your fossil fuel generation for the long term. So anyway, I appreciate how you did it. I think when we communicate to the public, that message, as far as an education process, needs to be probably more clear to people, because 100% to most people means all. So I just think we have to improve on the message. I appreciate the effort, and we continue to look at each one of these projects, and I hope you stick around for the presentation that we do later. So thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we do have a couple of other guests, but my understanding is you weren't going to comment. You're here for the presentation.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. You want to just stand up and introduce yourself?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, my name is Jill Smith, and I'm a renewable energy advocate, and I'm interested in learning more about the conversation. All right, sure. I'm going to move over.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm Carrie Williams. She's my wife, so we're living in Eagle River together. I was one of the first people to think of using Equipment as a pump type road facility. I've been working on the details on cleaning it up, getting it down to a reasonable size, and trying to lower the cost on everything I can. My background's in heavy construction, engineering, and I've done a lot of estimating. And so for all the tunnel work, the dirt work, the dams and everything, that's I've got a lot of experience in that. For the electrical stuff, I need your guys' help.
So. Well, thank you. Thanks for being here. Okay. We're going to move on to item 4 on the agenda, which is the consent agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
A second.
Is there any discussion on the consent agenda? Once again, I bring your attention to the training and the deadlines that are coming up, and really very specifically to the NRECA training in the APA annual meeting, if you are interested, because that's coming up very quickly in August. Any further discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor of approval of the consent agenda say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the consent agenda passes unanimously. Okay, we are going to move on to item 5, which is CEO report and correspondence. specific items that you would like to talk about, and then I'll ask the directors if there are specific items that they would really like to hear about that you're not planning on talking about.
I do believe, you know, the financials, obviously, were about $800,000 ahead for the month. And about $900,000 behind for year to date. Other than that, there's some things that are up and down, but we can certainly go through the report. We're doing good for our safety statistics, and those are presented for your review. The write-offs are, I think, consistent with what we've seen in the past. And I think we would like to talk a little bit about Member Appreciation Day and National Drive Electric Week, which I think is a little bit new for us. So Teresa and Arthur can talk a little bit, or whoever. Okay. So if the board would like, we can certainly get into that or answer any of the other questions you've got.
I have a couple questions on the financials. I don't know if anybody else has just like some basic questions.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can remember them. Are there other people that had questions, a little bit of questions on the financials? Stuart, you said yes. Can you help me out here?
Yeah, I'm trying to get in there.
So I see we were down about 2.8, almost 3% again for the month of April, is that right?
So May, the sales have improved.
May
improved, and as I reported through April last month, we did see an improvement in sales in May. So our base revenue was about even, and so we have a favorable variance from a month perspective for May. And then over, but from a sales perspective, on page 5, the bottom graph, 5-year comparison, 2018 is still trending at the 2016 level. But one thing I want to point out is while it is impacting budget year to date, We have made improvement, like I said last month, that we were continuing to make improvement and monitoring that. But on page 4, when you actually look at 2018 year-to-date compared to 2017, the variance is less. So from an actual perspective and the ratios, if you go over on page 6, you can see that your MFI and your tier numbers really over the 2016, 2017, and 2018, they're very close. 2015 has a little anomaly because MEA stayed on our system for a quarter. Mm-hmm. But you can see it's not far off from the ratios. And so from an actual to actuals, we're trending a lot better. It's just we're not meeting our budget expectations a lot more. And then you can also see on the bottom of 6, our equity ratios almost at 31%. So we're really making improvements there.
Okay. So you knew that was going to be a question. All the students aren't here, so maybe one of my first questions. Stuart, did you? Oh, Jim, go ahead.
I have one question. Would it be, would it be possible to separate the line item cumulative purchase power expenses?
It is two different items. The reason,
would I see it someplace else? I can't.
In the 10Q on a quarterly basis, it's broken out separately. On this, we lump them together because all fuel and purchase power, primarily all fuel and purchase power, is recovered dollar for dollar in revenue, and that's kind of the reason why we lump them. But definitely on your quarterly.
On the variance report as well, it's broken out.
No, the explanation.
Yeah,
the explanation. Yeah, that's what I
didn't
see. And also in your quarterly 10-Q, they're going to be on separate line
items. If you go to page 8 on
balance. Yes, thank you. You're right. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. On the purchase power, higher than anticipated purchases. What is that?
So it's based on the amount that we put into the budget to purchase Bradley Lake, Fire Island, and then from others as needed. So as mentioned earlier, on occasion we do purchase from NLMP if we can, that's more cost effective than running Beluga or something else. So it's really just from a budget perspective, what did you budget that you were going to purchase from all those sources, Bradley, Fire Island, and other utilities. So I believe we purchased a little bit more from Bradley and more from MLP, so their purchases are higher. And what happens with Bradley, as you know, we have a certain cost we pay for Bradley regardless of the energy. So when you end up purchasing more from the calculation, it drives down your average effective price, and that's in the last paragraph. But yeah, the budget is an estimate on how what we expect to purchase from those different sources, and sometimes just how we manage the system ends up being different than what we anticipated.
Okay. Do you have a question?
No.
I had one more, but I don't want to keep asking questions. I see on consumer accounts and customer information that it's another $300,000 over the budget, and says that it's a variance due to advertising for the acquisition. I want to say this is like month 3 in a row that it's been about that number. Is that right?
So actually, other costs have remained the same. It's still the same $300,000 that was spent initially on the advertising. So this is year to date. So every month, you're always going to be over 300 for the rest of the year. And that cost was spent quite a bit ago. Way earlier in the year.
Any other questions on financials?
Yeah, but great question. This is a year-to-date on the variances, not a month. So I it's a good question. It is going to be that way, and it'll trend the same.
Okay.
We might still ask you about it.
Yes, that's okay.
I don't know.
We'll have an answer.
I might take up the torch.
Well, you know, you read all these things.
Yes. I think
if there's nothing else. Good?
Yeah, we continue to make progress. We'll continue to monitor expenses to try to match it more evenly with sales levels, but we still need to run the system and, you know, so. But we'll keep you abreast.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Now we can talk about member appreciation. Does anyone have other questions? Okay.
Okay.
Just so excited to show you new information.
That's right. Would you like me to touch upon Member Appreciation Day as well?
Just that'd briefly. Be great.
Of course. So we are going into our fifth year for planning Member Appreciation Day. It will be held on October 5th from 10 to 2 p.m. October is Energy Awareness Month as well as National Cooperative Month. So that is why we held them. It will be very similar to last year in the fact that we will have it here on campus. We have a tent outside. We invite our members to participate in a hot dog barbecue. And our staff helps out immensely during this time. We'll have some bucket truck rides. We will have the energy bike coming back. And we'll be sending an invite to community organizations to participate in exhibit booths as well. This year, we are going to be expanding our electric vehicle test drive. Last year we had one dealer participate, and that was lots of sales and service, and they brought one Chevy Bolt. This year we have our own Bolt, which is great, but we're also inviting dealers, at least three additional dealers, to come. They're excited about it, and they'll bring potentially more than one vehicle. So we'll have our members, there won't be a really long line like it was last year. We'll get them in the vehicles that they want to get into. So, yeah. And that ties in, I guess, with the other event that we're planning for the first time this year, and that is National Drive Electric Week. That week is a little longer than a week. It's September 8th through September 16th. Before the actual celebration of the week, we will be present at Spenard's Farmers Market with Watson, which is our electric vehicle. And we will be inviting members to come ask us questions about Watson, as well as our EV charging station. Now, during the week, we will be presenting at the Clean Power Happy Hour. It's hosted by the Alaska Center. We have participated in this event before, and it's usually well attended and a good audience. So we look forward to doing that again this year with this new topic during the specific week. In addition, we will also be hosting a Where's Watson activity in which we will be driving Watson around to different locations throughout our service area and inviting our members to then meet us at that location and we could answer questions. One of the locations, for instance, would be Girdwood. Potentially some people might not be looking at our vehicle because it's, you know, usually within the Anchorage area. And so we'll be driving up to Girdwood one of the days and inviting our members to come and look at it at that point in time.
I'm
yeah, it's a good one. And so those are our two main activities. This is our first time participating in National Drive Electric Week. It was first established in 2011, and at that point in time, it was National Plug-in Week Day. Because there wasn't all electric vehicles as readily available as they are today. So it has transitioned over time for this.
If the spots where Watson's going to be already selected, like in the where is Watson?
So we do have some tentative locations, yes. One is Girdwood. The other would be Kincaid.
Uh-huh.
And the third, Diamond Center. That's right. Thank you, Julie. Diamond Center.
And so you're doing this like high visibility places where people are a little outside?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, but nothing set in stone, right? Those are our initial ideas.
So maybe as you get closer, it would be great for board members to know where, because I think some of that community outreach and that community presence, like we can go to some of that, or we can be attending some of that. And then if there are extra spots, you know, you can stop by places where we are, or, you know, like
right.
Connect to us in the community or some sort of connection.
So that's a great idea.
To the board as our ambassador.
One other component with the Where's Watson, we do have an article in the upcoming August outlet about it, just to let members know that it's coming. One of the ways that we're going to get out the word of where we're going to be is through social media.
Mm-hmm.
One of our ideas is to actually present a riddle a couple days before we actually park in the location and welcome our members to comment on where they think the riddle is suggesting. We assume, you know, they'll suggest correctly, but we will confirm that the day that we actually park at that location. So we do want to get that initial conversation with our members, you know, kind of a fun game, too.
And then I just have one more thing. So on the hot dog stuff, if you haven't already thought of it, veggie dogs alongside the hot dogs, for those of us that don't eat hot dogs, is always a question.
Thank you.
Then, maybe some gluten-free bun.
Yeah, good luck finding that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any others? Next, we're going to move on to, if there are no other questions on anything under CEO reports and first line, we're going to move on to director reports. So, is there an architect report that you, I know we're going to talk a little bit about architect in the executive session, but do you have a report?
There is a written report in your packet, and we met a couple times with ArcTech in the past month. I think the big thing is the report has gone to the GDS report on the RCC has gone to the commission. We've had presentations in front of the commission as talked about here. There are upcoming meetings on July 27th to go through the reliability standards in detail. The commission asked a number of technical questions, so we'll have basically a public meeting or a technical meeting on the 27th to address those questions, and we'll have staff there to do that. And then they've asked us also to come back on August 8th and ask, you know, try to finish up on those questions. And I think from the commission standpoint, they're just trying to figure out, well, how do we stand up this organization? We've got good recommendations. We've talked about the regulatory compact between, you know, the commission and the RRCC. They're trying to figure out what is the method to do that. So I think that's some of the work that we're trying to get done through ArcTech is trying to figure out some of those issues. I think in your packet or in your folder, I've included an update of the RCC Memorandum of Understanding with all six utilities. I think we're getting very close. You'll see kind of a redline version of where we're at. We probably have at least another meeting to try to get that finalized. And so I think we're making good progress. And, you know, I think what I'd like to talk about in executive session is what role ArcTech plays in this process going forward versus the six utilities. There's been a little bit of struggle on the four utilities in ArcTech versus the six utilities overall and who kind of moves the ball forward.
Okay. So you guys have Jim or Mary?
I'm not sure. I'd probably prefer to make him
okay. Fair enough. All right. Any questions? Do you want to talk about that again? How about the LEAP?
Sure. So there's been a policy meeting, which I didn't go to, a policy committee meeting, I couldn't make it, but there was a presentation on net metering that they sponsored that you guys participated in, and it was a bunch of vendors and people active in the solar community. I thought we did an excellent job. We had a great presentation in terms of talking about the utilities response. One of the things I will say that I thought was really interesting about this particular thing is that when, I left mine at home, but the Alaska Energy Center, the speaker that talked about when he thought net metering was good. Do you want to come up and help me?
Oh, I'll try.
Thank you.
Alaska Center for Energy and Power.
Yeah, so the Alaska Center for Energy and Power put together kind of when they thought we were going to be at the cap for net metering, and then all the power utilities, they had independently asked, you know, when do you think you're going to be there? You know, part of our ongoing discussion that we have here is how do we stay on top of these emerging technologies and these things that are future forward coming, and not get fully consumed with everything with MLNP acquisition, so that when we come out of the acquisition, we're behind on some of these other things. I thought it was really telling the guy at the Alaska Center for Power and Energy had us reaching net metering in like 5 years, 10 years, and
yeah,
all the utilities had it between like 30 and 40 years. So here's the energy guy who does only this kind of stuff in the energy center, right? And here's all the utilities thinking, and so it's like this on the graph. So, you know, I really want to encourage us to continue to stay on top of these other issues of net metering, this other stuff about, you know, solar is getting so much more economical. Mm-hmm. The amount of interest in the room in all the different ways that people can participate in solar energy, it's going to make our community solar project be left behind if we don't figure that out, if we don't get on top of what's going on in our relationship with the RCA. Well, not our relationship, but our whatever they're doing. You all know what that is, to sort of, you know, not be on top of it. So I think, you know, I went to a house party for REAP as well, where they're talking to their new constituents, and I think this issue from REAP's standpoint about how are the utilities working together to do regional level planning, and the pressure from the community of people who are interested in seeing the utilities work better regionally as an avenue towards being able to do more renewables, that's going to continue. So again, in the conversation about how we move forward and participate with our utilities, I think that's going to be important. I'm going to be aligning my schedule so I can go to more of those policy things. But I did want to say what a great job you did on the presentation in net metering, how glad I was to see you there. You talked about our sustainable triple bottom line, and I got some feedback from that about the quality of our presentation, and I appreciated that. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions? Yeah, thank you. Mary?
Yeah. I'll wait.
Okay. All right. Board committee reports on finance.
Yes, the Audit and Finance Committee met just before this, and just in, I think they've met one more time previous to have those minutes are posted here. And I have a motion to come out of that committee. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Now is the time?
No. But,
yeah. We met. Stay tuned for more later.
Yeah, it's coming up here. Under new business, yeah. All right, so we will take that up. How about operations?
So we have had our previous operations committee meeting was last week of June, and in that meeting we came out with recommendations on two resolutions that did pass in the board meeting at the end of June. Since then, we've had a biweekly update, which was in mid-July, and then on Monday we had our monthly ops committee meeting. We gave an overview, Lee, and gave an overview in the biweekly meeting and sort of gave us a feel of where things were going, focused on the deal and the integration. And that's sort of how we're looking at it. This was repeated again Monday night. However, it was with the full team, so we had the opportunity to ask several questions and stay up to date on the process and how the progress is going. I think we're going to talk some more in executive session about that tonight. And that's one thing I think that in our monthly meetings, while we're in this negotiation, you know, period that we need to put on just every executive session have a MLP potential acquisition update. I think it's important that we make sure that all members of the board are up to date on it. But short, very short one. The other thing that we discussed in the operations committee meeting was the CEO evaluation scorecard, and that will be discussed today in executive session.
Okay. Thank you for that. And governance, Susan is not here. And you have not met. And I know there's a lot of work to be done in that committee, so I hope we get something on the schedule to start working on that. It's important. There's a lot of work to be done, so I know that you are anxious to get going, and you just have to keep pushing to get set up for that. Other meetings anybody had? We're going to talk about the APA meeting that we had yesterday. That's a good meeting, so we'll talk about that in executive session. Yep. Anything else? Okay, moving on to unfinished business. We have none under new business. First item up under item 8, new business, is what came out of our audit and finance committee from tonight. So, we made a recommendation, right?
We did. I know.
There is a motion.
Yeah. So I move that the Board of Directors authorize the Chief Executive Officer to select and negotiate financing services associated with potential acquisition of MLMP as discussed in the executive session.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any further discussion than that which we had in the Audit and Finance Committee? Okay, hearing none, I will call a question. All those in favor of the motion on the floor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously. Okay. And we have Mr. Rissy was up to talk about a couple of things for us tonight. Pump storage and Battle Creek. Both. Two lines.
Yes, good evening.
Hello.
I'd like to actually thank Mr. Roth and Mr. Williams and Ms. Smith. For their interest in renewables, Williams and Ms. Smith put a lot of effort into the pump storage concept at Kootenai, and I borrowed a little bit of that material and some review of it, and it's included in this presentation.
Great.
So, it's actually going to take it to Kootenai. So, the simple concept here, pump storage is you got power and energy. There's a little bit of discussion earlier with Mr. Smith about power and energy. Power is really that force. Energy is that force over time. So kind of representing simplistically, the energy is like the size of a reservoir up high. Power is like this height and verticality. It's that ability to push. So that's kind of the big issues. You got these other little simple components. You got to have a some sort of pipeline to connect these two. You got this pump generator and pump storage. This one's a little different than your typical hydro, where you're collecting runoff water, it's dropping down, and you're going through a turbine and then a generator. Here you're actually having a component that can be reversible. So, again, the simple concept, and then we take the power. I've run a few numbers here for work we had done at Cooper Lake. So HDR had to do a study for us looking at Cooper Lake and go, what could you do with Cooper Lake? So it's a 20 megawatt facility. We said, well, let's potentially look at a couple of things, say existing units or adding to the units. There's It's not very simple. Literally, pump to use the existing units, you've got to replace them, you got to go back up Penstock and go back out the tunnel, or you build a new one, and you have a lot more flexibility. The numbers they came up with were $125 million. I did a simple evaluation using that capital cost. I want to know one particular feature that's very important. It's kind of this throughput efficiency. It doesn't matter whether it's batteries or whether it's a hydro facility. When you pump up, you're using energy, and then the energy gets down, you have losses both ways. So more highly efficient pump storage facility or battery, you're talking the 80 to 90% efficiency. That means you lose 10 to 15% of that energy in this storage concept. It ends up being a reasonably notable cost. Otherwise, you have your O&M and you have a big fixed cost. So using that and our standard financing costs, I did a very simplistic evaluation. This is daily storage. I'm pumping in. I'm using it daily. This is actually pretty close to how we might use it more optimally. And you can see the additional cost now is $250 a megawatt hour. Hopefully that comes down. But that's the way the numbers play out. Work that was not done. So this is very simple. This is a high-level study. We didn't get into permitting and environmental impacts. If you recall, the 7 years and $5 million to do the relicensing of Cooper Lake, you'd be going through that whole additional exercise to do something like this. Well, there's no detailed engineering here. This is conceptual engineering. You need to truly economically model this with inputs and outputs tied to our grid to get the real value. And you need to assess its impacts on the current uses. You know, right now we're collecting a lot of water. We have concerns at the end of summer that we're going to reach spill conditions. Now, do I have additional storage capability? Am I raising a dam? I mean, there's a whole lot of work that's sort of being pursued. Just a little bit of highlight on some environmental conditions of Battle Creek. One of the concerns was they're diverting water out of the stream. Salmon sense attributes of the stream to figure out which way they want to come back from the ocean to get into that stream. I'm diverting water from Kenai Lake and I'm pumping it into Cooper Lake and it comes out of Cooper Stream. Am I messing up the salmon's instincts? You got to do studies and you got to address them, and can they be overcome? There'd be a whole lot of work there. So anyway, Kootenai Battery. So here's Mr. Williams. He had a proposal. Hopefully I'm summarizing correctly. We had a conversation before this meeting. He's doing a lot of additional work. He's trying to refine this and get costs down. But the concept generally is two new power plants, one at 300 megawatts, one at 750 megawatts. It's something that would exceed the rail belt needs. So potentially, hey, here's power for the rail belt. It's cascading storage. I got a couple images subsequent to this that will explain what that is all about. Essentially, the Kootenai Lake is not a key part of the storage here. It's another reservoir that's now being created. Kootenai Lake stays about its same level, and because it's about its level, you can have water releases into the Kootenai River. This does require a Kinnick River tail race because pump storage has a pond at the bottom. It has some sort of ponding arrangement at the bottom so you can pump it back up. Just like I talked about the fish issue with Cooper Lake, you would have a fish issue here if you're bringing Kinnick water up to the Kootenai Reservoir or higher. And you would also have issues. You have to deal with silt. There's significant silt issues. How would you create a pond at the river level? A lot of issues that would need to be addressed. Again, I appreciate the concept here. If you would like to see more information, you know, I have in your presentation, these are good sites where you can get a pretty good summary and more specific detail. And what Mr. Williams had been proposing. It also included the potential for, with an objective of 100% renewables, where would I get that renewable power? Well, there's an area northwest of Fairbanks that's identified as a very high wind potential site. Maybe you could build a lot of wind turbines there, but you'd need significant transmission to make all this work. Very significant transmission. For example, those of you who have seen our grid, we've got to have two ties, and they're limited to about 75 megawatts. So if you potentially have 500 megawatts or more going north-south, you have a serious transmission issue that needs to be addressed. So here's the occluded battery concept, and so you see a third pond here. So a little lamp down in the Kinnickle River, and I'm creating some sort of ponding arrangement. I have to build that in it. Along the river somewhere, 300 megawatts down low, I got a Kluna Lake, which I'm now maintaining this level, and I'm having potentially a release of water going in the Kluna River. And what had been storage here would now have to be moved up here, and we get it at, 160,000 megawatt hours out of there currently. It's rated 44 megawatts, really, with constraints. It functions at 40 megawatts, but typically you get about 16 megawatts on average through the year. Mr. Ross was discussing averages and peaking. Well, so inflows start in April, and they end in the end of October, or at least recently they've been moving to November. We try to avoid spilling that inflow, which the risk typically is in September. So what happens is, all this inflow needs to go up here or be utilized immediately. So, kind of FYI, the storage now has to occur here, and if you have additional renewable projects, you're putting that storage up here. So you got to put a lot of storage up here to make this work. Potentially, if you can coordinate it with wind for shorter periods, you're trying to get how many days do I not have enough wind, and can I accommodate it? I'm balancing these two ponds here. Anyway, that's the general concept.
Paul, is there a reservoir up at Thunderbird at this time?
If you bear with me.
Okay.
There is not. So appreciate the question. No, there is not one there. That would be one of the additions here that we'd be talking about. But bear with me is, this is what I borrowed from Mr. Williams. His original concept, and he's changed this a bit, but he had a reservoir here, this Thunderbird Creek here that, been to Thunderbird Falls, that's where it drains into it. You go down here and it drains over here. You're now creating some reservoirs up high. So you would have to have reservoir storage, again with a model, to ensure you can meet all your needs. You would size it accordingly and build it up here. And here's potential for maybe two different reservoirs up here. One of the issues with this reservoir and why Mr. Williams has dropped it is because there's a big community here. All these would be what FERC considers high hazard dams. You've got people down below it, the dam fails, you need to address how to communicate with those people and how they're out of the way, and you got to do all the mapping of how high levels rise and what the risk is, and a lot of issues. We've got extensive plan associated with that for Cooper Lake and the existing Kootenai Lake facility. Hunter West was another option. This is much further. You're tunneling through a mountain. There's a Hunter Creek option here. One time we actually looked at it, some others looked at it, putting a dam here or a river option maybe, and then tying into a transmission line, actually is a low voltage transmission line here. But you'd be building extensive transmission into this facility. Here's where you'd be putting this reservoir. New tunnel for a new 300 megawatt facility. There was a proposal for repowering these with reversible pump turbines. The problem is now you've got to move them roughly 60 feet down so you don't have this net positive suction head where you get cavitation on a pump. You've got to have enough pressure on it. It's a serious issue in an existing concrete building to lower all that stuff. You'd be rebuilding the plant in order to do something like that. So anyway, here's the big picture. Your storage is now up here. You still have all these inflows in here, and what you can't utilize at time of use has to end up going here, and then you're adding other renewables from the community, and you're using this as your storage. So it might need to be quite a bit bigger than what we're seeing here for Gluna, potentially do that. Again, the model would have to tell us how that would work and how big this would have to be. And so that's the general picture of what it would be. There, oh, one other element here I showed, you need a powerhouse probably down here, potentially over here as well. And mm-hmm. you have to tie transmission into that.
Yes, Link. Paul, are you pumping to get to these other reservoirs or to fill those reservoirs, or is that other inflows?
Well, I'll take it. These have been dropped. So let's just talk Thunderbird reservoirs. So you can see with the natural inflow hydro area is, and it's pretty limited here. There's no glacial. It's just literally the area where you're going to get snow and rainfall would be the inflows. The majority of water for this to work, and especially for storage, you potentially you can take some out of here, put it in here in storage, but you also have the water coming in here. Again, after November, there's no inflows coming into this lake, and if you're not using it for storage and you have wind issues, you have a lot of wind and you want to pump up, I got to be coming out of here and moving it up to there. Again, high level at this time would take a lot of modeling and engineering work to develop this. Two more slides, we can go back.
I'm just curious, from the lakeside, have they ever considered raising that dam and just using a larger reservoir in that area? I'm assuming they have.
I can't say if it's done been done in history. We have not recently done that. You do run into some issues if you've been at the intake structure. Mm-hmm. You can see it's relatively, the side bounds of that intake are relatively flat. You'd be broadening, you'd be making a much larger dam to make that work. And then you create other issues with, okay, now what's my risk? So the majority of this goes out to the ocean, but there are, you know, some you're going across the highway and things here.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of risk picture that would have to be addressed to do such a thing.
It seems like a much more economical direction than the other, and I have spent a lot of time up in that area.
It's a very fair comment. There are other issues that, and we end up seeing this in the 1999 Fish and Wildlife Agreement. There's a lot of recreation taking place currently. You got biking trails. Chris Williams suggested maybe, you know, if you build these facilities, you can put a tram up here. You could add skiing. I presume the idea is synergistically with the facilities. You could do that today, but they wouldn't be synergistic facilities. But if you were to raise that, now you're changing some of the recreational dynamics as well. And, well, those would have to be addressed. So here were some of the proposed benefits about stabilizing the lake, restoring the salmon run. There are some issues here with the salmon run. We still have not reached through studies what the historical run was, so there's work to be done on what that actually was and get, a scientific evaluation establishes what the history was. There could be increased value. There is recreational value today. What might the increased value be? This was that lift concept I mentioned, ski lift. There is bike, hike, and adventures today. There may be other opportunities with a revised picture. So what I did here, these are not Mr. Carey's numbers. His numbers are lower, and he's working to get them lower, and I certainly hope he succeeds. I've used numbers we've seen for Matanas Susitna, for Cooper Lake, and numbers we've seen for Snow River. I've also seen some numbers on pump storage from Energy Information Energy Information Administration consistent. You're talking about $5,000 to $10,000 a kilowatt range. So that puts you in this kind of range of cost. I use the lower number for the sake of evaluation, same thing I did with Cooper Lake, in this economic evaluation of what would the megawatt hour cost be, and I'm going to go a little more detail of what this looks like. It's good to understand because we're going to have more in energy storage, so I'll spend one slide on what the picture might look like, and hopefully it's somewhat informative. As requested on some of these future technologies. But it came out here about $225, utilizing this lower capital cost figure per megawatt hour, the storage component. By the way, this is not too dissimilar from the numbers you see for batteries, lithium-ion batteries right now. You're seeing numbers in the 200 to 400 range per megawatt hour. I'll highlight a significant difference is you're seeing a lot of technology development in lithium-ion batteries. So I anticipate that going lower much more quickly than you might see in hydrotype technologies. So I'm sorry this is a little small here on some of the numbers, but a couple of concepts. You know, if you have a car and you have extra seats and you're driving your car and your seats are empty, you bought a car with extra capacity. You utilize it all the time. If you optimally utilize all that seating, now I have more passenger miles in a year. This is kind of similar. So that's what this throughput concept is if I have storage capacity and I'm maximizing my pumping into it, and I maximize my turbine drainage out of it, I get this figure, I get the maximum throughput right here. So literally half the hours of the year I'm pumping in a max, and half the hours I'm taking out a max. And I do this because I reached the lowest cost point. Now this is not a realistic operating point, but it gives you just a theoretical maximum throughput of 4.5 million megawatt hours. And that would get you a cost somewhere here in the $150 megawatt hour range based on, again, my numbers I've been just discussed here in the prior slide. If I go, if I utilize it less and less and less, and I had the cycles per year, and this was just to create a model. I said, if I did 4,000, this was half hours in a year, and then I did it, I just did half the hours, and I did half the hours. The whole idea was to create a curve here, and I'm dropping this throughput. As I drop the throughput, the cost per megawatt hour go way up. Just utilizing an area where I think that there's some potential. This is 5 hours at max, probably would be spread out to eight or something, and I would be charging the rest of the hours on a given day. So if you're doing a daily cycle, this might be the kind of cost we'd be looking at for this facility. That's where that 250 roughly comes from. So it's the same with batteries. The more you utilize it on throughput, the more cost effective it is. The less you use it, I let it sit in the garage, the more it costs me per mile I drive. It's just the same idea. So that's what that's about. This concept is even earlier than the Cooper Lake one, because we haven't done a conceptual engineering. There's been a concept development. Again, I appreciate that we have members of the community moving this forward. This would need to get into an engineering company, and financing to get these initial steps going. And you have the same issues of I need to do the permitting and assess the environmental impacts, engineering, I need to do economic modeling, and assess the impacts on all the current uses. That's pretty much it, unless there's questions.
Questions?
Okay.
You call it a mouthful of ice, but oh, Cooper, like, I don't understand why it would be $125 million, because we have an existing pipeline there. We've got a lake at the top, we've got a lake at the bottom. I thought it was just a matter of small modifications and putting a either a reversible pump or an additional pump to be able to pump it back up uphill when you have excess wind. So why is it so expensive?
Well, and that's the highlight. As I mentioned on the Eklutna mile, I have to drop the unit way down. That's one issue. So I'm literally, I have to rebuild the plant to do that. I'm using an existing penstock and pipe. If I want to use the existing, actually to continue to utilize the reservoir as we use it today, this is most of this is creating a separate plant with separate piping and access
at Cooper Lake.
At Cooper Lake to the lake. There's not a lot of recovery in the existing facility. Literally, you've got to build a new plant. Yep, that's a surprising finding.
And if we build a new plant, what can we get out of it? Still just 25 megawatts?
Well, we could size it to, I just used 25, but we could size it to a variety of sizes, but then it's probably permitting might be more of the issue. We could size it bigger. We could make it 50, we could make it 100. Now it's, one issue with pump storage is, how much of a reservoir do you want? How many days, how many hours of storage do you want? And that decides the size of your reservoir. If you're designing and building the reservoir itself, they'll design it for what you think that model is. We happen to have a lake, and now it's allowed, what's the allowed range of operation? We use most of the allowed range of operation, we use all the allowed range of operation to date. We would have to have an expanded range of operation to add pump storage to it. So there's a lot more work that would be necessary. You can upfront on modeling, what do you need? So this was to move forward a very high level concept, get some cost estimates and some approaches developed so that we could inform on how to financially move this forward and what the considerations might be. So very early level in the concept.
I guess I'll wait, because I need more explanation. It's not making sense to me yet. I mean, it just seems to me that if we can generate 20 megawatts now, and we can put that water back up into the upper lake, then we could bring up our capacity for the year, because we've run out of water, the usable water that we have.
Yeah, there's a number of issues. And it might take a lot of discussion actually to continue.
Yeah,
so
I'm not talking about tonight.
Yeah. Maybe we can do another session on it sometime.
Okay.
Talk more of the details. But it seems to be addressed.
Thank you.
Okay, and then we lead into the next.
Okay.
Kell Creek here. And, Battle Creek, generally speaking, the Battle Creek project, I believe you mean.
No.
Oh.
It's all right. We
it's
have
okay.
It.
We okay. Have it there.
We
well,
can
you're,
get
you'll
that
seem to be having it.
Email to
us. Place it straightforward here.
Because we don't have it. Okay.
This is much like the Cooper Lake diversion. What we're doing here is there's a creek that's adjacent to Bradley Lake and it's being diverted into the lake, so it represents more energy, not more power. We're not repowering, we're not adding, you know, new turbines, the same turbines, so the power output capability is the same, but they can run more the year or at higher output level, so we're getting more energy. So that's what this project is all about. So this is being managed through the Energy Authority. Simply speaking, so here we are in Kenai Peninsula, south of Homer, across the water. There's a great big glacier here. We're taking some of that water. So here's the bay. Here's the existing dock. There's a camp down here they built. They're using this, utilizing this access road to get to the project area. And I'll get a little more detail on what we're doing with the project area, but this is the diversion dam. For those of you who went to Cooper Lake, saw the diversion dam. It's pretty comparable in size and appearance. It's going through a pipe, a bigger one, 5-foot HDP instead of our 36-inch pipe. And it's being diverted here where there's some existing diversion, and then it goes into the lake. This is a road addition, and this will be a road with a pipe. So here we are up on the existing road. Here's just a couple of pictures to illustrate what the work is. It's pretty much road construction. So this is the road they're putting in, and this is about where they are today. They're here, and they're working hard. The idea is to get the road all the way to here by the end of the construction season. If they could, they'd start working on here and then put the diversion, then put the piping in next year. So you can see there's a staging area where a lot of equipment's located. This particular piece of conduit, this is a culvert. This is a long culvert. This is literally right here. So this picture is going across this little stream that goes into the lake. Oh, by the way, it's the diversion is about 10,000 feet. Very similar to Cooper Lake again. So, typical activities against road building, they do what they call pioneering. You do this, the grubbing, removing all the overburden, pushing it to the side. We'd already done tree clearing outside of the bird habitat season. It has an impact on the schedule. You got rock drilling activity that comes in later. There's been a lot of blasting taking place every single day. That may be based on a lesson learned from Cooper Lake. It's a lot faster if you just go ahead and blast. So they're drilling all these blasting holes. They drill hundreds of them, and they put blasted material in, and then they blast a section and move on. And so you can see, you're seeing from the lake and on coming up this diversion road. So a lot of progress. This is actually going very well, by the way. This is what you see for a schedule. Orion is the prime contractor. GMC is the sub doing most of this road construction. Things are essentially on schedule. They're on budget. There's some discussion about a way of potentially maybe getting the project done this year. We'll see if it evolves to something. So Orion puts out a schedule. Orion forms their own report. We've got Dowell, the owner's engineer, working for the Energy Authority, puts out their report. The Railbelt Utilities have their own engineer who worked on Stetson Creek. Excellent individual. He's a site engineer, and he's providing reports as well. So we have a lot of oversight here. Orion puts out this three-week-ahead schedule every week. Get a three-week-ahead schedule so you see what's coming. So this is the overall schedule here, as I pointed out on the map. We're trying to get the roads all the way into the diversion dam, and then immediately go after that beginning next year and get that pipeline in. I got a little bit on the challenges ahead. You're actually looking down kind of a steep thing. Here's much talus. Looking down a steep area here. That's kind of a typical thing encountered. So there are three or four walls that are of concern. They have, once we've kind of gotten to this point, they've determined we don't need to blast or change the slope of this wall, we can actually work around it with fill. So it'll make it really a lot easier to deal with, and we've determined we can do the same thing with this last wall. These two are going to be the heavy work where we need to basically cliffs. We need to tear some back, again, like you might have seen it over at Stetson Creek Diversion, where you need to create a stable slope, and you got to do a lot of blasting, a lot of dirt, rock work in those two areas. So that's up ahead. So, simply speaking, here's the project budget. And we're on budget. Quantities, fill cut quantities, that's an area where you can have change orders, because they are estimates until you really get into the project and start doing the work. And expenditures to date are $6.1 million. I want to highlight here, no accidents. So, any questions?
So I'm overjoyed that you're doing that and all. But back when we built Bradley Lake, they talked about adding 20 feet to the dam so that you get more storage, and putting that third turbine in down powerhouse. We built it big enough for three turbines instead of two at the time. Now, you know what I've asked about it before, and said we don't have the ability to get that much power off the Kenai Peninsula. Is that the reason why we don't think about adding to that capacity, or are there other things that are in the way?
It's a great thought. We continue to think about it. The big hindrance really is the transmission system and getting access to additional power if it were to be installed. It goes into this big picture of potentially new hydro resources, utilizing them as a battery to some extent, maybe to a great extent. It would represent another 60 megawatts of power on the system for peaking. It would represent more storage. You're hitting all the highlights. But we need to build out transmission to access that, in addition to the cost of adding a unit and raising the dam. And, of course, the permitting would need to be addressed as well.
Is acquiring NLMP, is that going to change that picture in any appreciable way?
Well, I might actually let, I don't know if you want to speak to that, Lee, or you want my view on that.
Well, I think, you know, as all the things you're talking about would be kind of a study done by the Bradley Lake Project Management Committee, and we currently have six members. And I think any time we have fewer members, it's easier to get these projects done. So I would say the acquisition of MLMP would improve the likelihood that you could move forward on something like that, because you've just got one less entity that might have reasons not to do it. And I think what you've seen so far is MLMP really didn't want to do this project, and they're not participating in this project because of the cost of natural gas they have at Blue River Unit. Their avoided cost is less than what they could or provide power out of here. So I think in that regard, you know, Chugach still sees this as a long-term benefit. Its avoided costs are higher. And, you know, what we saw with Battle Creek Project is we could get this power less than what our avoided cost was.
There may be opportunities where, just like in this case, we're not going even on the existing shares, but potentially doing something in the future. But it's complex working, as you've all noted, with the other utilities to do something that involves us jointly. But you're hitting the nail on the head in terms of, does it represent opportunity for both renewables, storage, and coordination with our grid? Absolutely does.
Other questions? Comments? Okay, we are going to go into executive session here, and we have a few items to talk about. Hopefully, it won't be an executive session too long. So, I think we'll go into executive session and take a literally five-minute break.
Okay.
Come back in executive session. So we do need a motion to do that.
Yeah. I move that pursuant to Alaska Statute 10.25.175(c)(1), (2), and (3), the Board of Directors go into executive session to discuss and receive reports regarding financial matters, the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect on the finances of the cooperative, discuss personnel matters that may be tied to prejudice the reputation or character of the person, however that person may request a public discussion, and to discuss with our attorneys legal matters, the immediate knowledge of which could have an adverse effect on the legal position of the cooperative.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor of going into executive session?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we are in executive session. We are coming out of executive session. Ready to go into regular session, reconvene, and we have a couple of orders of business. Item number 10, first order of business is the 2018 CEO Performance Scorecard, Project Specific Initiative. Do we have a motion on that item?
I move that the Board of Directors approve the 2018 CEO Performance Scorecard and Project Specific Initiatives as discussed in executive session.
And a second.
Okay, is there any further discussion on that item? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion of the approval of the CEO Performance Scorecard, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, and we're going to move on to the appointment of a new board member. We'll go through the process of nominating candidates. We're going to open the floor to nominations.
Nominate Matt Moore.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay.
And do you want more nominees?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I nominate Carol Falls.
Oh, wait. Do I need to vote on the first nomination?
No.
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 Okay. No, that happens.
No vote.
All right.
All right. The floor is still open for other nominations?
And I nominate Carol Paulus.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further nominations? Okay. Hearing none, we are going to take a vote on the two nominees. I'm going to call...
discussion.
Oh, is there any discussion?
I do have an order. Now you're going to have to persevere with me because, like I've said years and years ago, I suffer seriously from dyslexia. So what I read here, what I see and what you hear are going to be vastly, unfortunately, different. So the structure. There's a model of director competency and perspective. And I dug through a bunch of stuff. Anyone who can only think of one way to spell a word obviously lacks imagination. That's saying the limits. The board should reflect the diversity of its senior management, its employees, its shareholders, and its community. Diversity brings competent perspective and is important protection against groupthink at the board level. In this regard, diversity of board members ensures decision-making perspective in department heads. Upper echelon theory relies on behavioral decision-making theories as well as concepts of organizational demographics. Court boards are relevant and can use organizational outcomes such as firm performance and strategic achievements. This theory explains the impact of demographics and community diversity in the for lines. Research argues that a diversified board can make more effective decisions as compared to homogeneous boards that report to the writing. Organizations can attest, can attract, retain, and take confident competitive edges from diverse talents to begin by increasing diversity among top management teams, and again, quote, writer. This study is based on upper echelon theory. Because it relates to top-level management characteristics and its effect on firm performance, diversified boards may better monitor, manage managers and top management teams because board diversity increases board independence. Board composition of directors representing a range of perspectives leads to an environment of collaborative tension that is essential in good governance, in a room where everybody has a different point of view and there is a greater opportunity for cross-pollination of ideas. There is fewer unspoken assumptions, less groupthink, and greater likelihood of innovation. This allows the board to ask probing questions and tackle challenging issues, such as risk management, succession planning, which is at the center of good corporate governance. The bottom line of these studies show diversity from the board room many benefits. I will compile by a few of the benefits you share here. A diverse board provides diversity of thought. All board members bring their own personal background and experience to their position in the boardroom. Each individual mind is capable of offering unique ideas, solutions, and strategies. For boards with more diverse membership, the breadth of personal experience is wider and more comprehensive. A diverse board helps address complex corporate issues, according to a study by Russell Arnold, Reynolds and Associates, an executive search organization. The board needs to constantly challenge itself to keep pace with the changing dynamics that the company faces. This is best done through a robust dialogue of differing views, as long as they are all offered respectfully and listened to carefully. Having multiple views on possible outcomes and action results in more thoughtful decision-making process. A diverse board is more representative of its shareholders. Since boards exist to serve the best interest of the shareholders, or our members in this case, it makes sense that the board members should reflect the diversities of those same members. Not to mention a diverse boardroom is also more reflective of the base of the potential clients or customers. A diverse boardroom increases revenue. For many of the reasons stated above, companies with diverse boards outpace more homogeneous organizations in profit growth. No, we don't have profitability, but we get greater efficiency. According to recent studies of McKinsey Company, very well respected, for companies with the ranking top quartile of executive board diversity, ROE were 53% on average than they were for those in the bottom quarter. In summary, to succeed, jump as quickly at opportunities as you do at conclusions, and that was based on Frank. I'm concerned that one of the candidates is of the same profession as two other candidates. So that makes 43% of our board reflect only one profession. Second of all, one of the candidates is also an employee of the same organization as another one of our board members. So it concentrates the representation in one company, certainly not reflecting diversity of the members of the members of that community. Third, one of the members also reflects organizational relationships that are similar to, in fact, all three, and that certainly doesn't reflect the our board our members, our society, our members both in GREX and our members in LLP. I would ask if you take that into consideration in your voting on them. I would prefer the reflect the diversity of our city and not reflect 43, not have our board members reflect 43%. 43% of our members, our board members reflect one company or one organization. I can only ask that. I beg of you to take that into consideration.
Okay, thank you. We have two nominees, and the process will be we will, everyone just votes once, so I will call the first name, and we will vote for one of the two candidates, and Davina does need to take down the way you vote. So, with that, all those in favor of approving Harold Hollis for the vacant board position, please raise your hand. Okay. Did you get that, Diana?
Yes, ma'am.
And those in favor of Matt Moore to fill the vacant board position, please raise your hands. Jim, are you abstaining?
I'm considering it doesn't reflect what I just said, and I find it important that study of information is not respected. I really do. I understood it, and I knew that I should vote before I vote. The vote is simply a no reason for me to vote.
Can you abstain from voting?
You just need a majority to elect.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, yes, we do have a majority.
All right. So, we have a new board member, and we have a motion. Is there someone who want to read the motion?
Yeah. Move that pursuant to board policy 603 and Article 4, Section 8 of the Chugach's bylaws, the Board of Directors appoint Harold Hollis effective July 25th, 2018 to fill the vacancy on the Chugach Board.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing no opposition, the motion passes unanimously.
I'm going to back to that. That's bad.
Okay. I guess you'll figure out how to record that in the record that he didn't vote.
Yes. Thank you.
Actually, I think you were going to swear in this vote candidate.
I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will honestly and faithfully perform my duties as a director of Chugach Electric Association, and that I will uphold the articles of incorporation, the bylaws, and the association policies to the best of my abilities.
Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I do want to say I absolutely respect your opinions. Thank you. And I do look forward to working with all of you on this board. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
And Lee, I did not mean to walk away from you.
Congratulations.
Okay. All right. And with that, it's late, but we will go around the room have some director comments and before we adjourn.
Thank you.
This is my seventh year on the board, and I came on the board with an agenda. I still have that same agenda. I still think we need to move this utility, this rail belt, this state to a more renewable energy future. And I'm going to keep on keeping on. I don't care what it, I mean, you know, if it hair lips the Pope, I'm going to continue to work towards a renewable future. And, you know, I see us making small incremental steps from time to time. It's not enough for me, but maybe it's enough for everybody, so I'll just keep on doing my thing and hope that at some point the rest of the board decides that it's the thing to do. That's about it.
Yep.
Yeah, I want to thank the folks here. I think really done the remark. I mean, the amount of work that they've done is rather astonishing. Truly appreciate it. I will cap them. Lee, I think they've done a good job. I'm glad that we went to a major effort putting together a better valuation, CEO valuation, and it was really fruitful and some amazing messes, and I think we did a nice job. I really do. I really appreciate it. It's a little bit lost in the presentation. If they thought we'd not just in colors. Markouts and all of that stuff. So if I didn't really follow it, it looks like lots of things that were valuable. I've been here 7 years. I've enjoyed the time here. I'll probably go less now. I find that some of the changes have not been what I would consider. I was not pleased with your comment about voting. As a matter of fact, a couple times that I did not vote, you guys went through the effort to make to address the situation. One was last month when we had an issue on rules procedures, and you guys went ahead and looked at it and made that change. That's in contrast to what I was accused of. With the vote today, I thought it was an appropriate question. As a matter of fact, it was addressed, and it was addressed very well. And I did vote on that. So please, I did not. I withheld my vote until questions were correct. Okay? And I didn't have to put myself in any position that would cause the angst that you had to expose to. So, with that, I appreciate it. I will stay here for the next 4 years. So things don't change dramatically. I hope I can continue to bring things to the board. Contrarian, with the astonishing amount of curiosity, has always been my awesome thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
I keep seeing this board as we're in a phenomenally exciting time, and I'm seeing the work and the work productivity from you, Lee, and your senior management team, and all the way down the ranks. It's impressive. I like what I've seen, and I think that's the best way for us to move forward through these, you know, challenging times. There's a lot of stuff on our plate, and just want to hope you stay focused and move in the right direction. Thank you.
So Anchorage is one of the most diverse tracts in the nation, and we have 90 first languages that are spoken in our Anchorage school district. When I
submitted an application for the open appointment. I was one woman and seven white men. And what we had to choose from today was, or what we had to choose from in the candidate pool, I would say was not diverse. I agree with that. But I would say it doesn't start at what we get to choose. It starts at how we promote. What members are we engaging? What do our committees look like? What does our annual meeting look like? So in terms of diversity, I agree with Director Henderson that we have a long way to go. I believe the work has to start in order to get those kinds of results. It has to start at our member engagement level, and we can certainly talk about that. I'm so pleased that we're going to have some time set aside for strategic planning. I plan to raise that. I share the concern of some of the other directors in terms of focusing so much on the MLNP acquisition that we are losing opportunities to make huge gains in renewable resources and sustainability in some of the projects whose time really has come. To that, I will say what we did tonight was appoint somebody for a 9-month position, and two candidates are going to have to run for their right to serve on this board starting in March through the May election, and I believe that is going to be, they're going to have to run. They're going to have strong candidate positions. They're going to have to put their names out there. All of the organizations are coming out of the woodwork now who have just lost our elections to have a say. And we have seen today that the sustainable, renewable advocates will show up. So, you know, I think that our job in cultivating this level of diversity is to make sure that we're out there asking these candidates to apply, asking these candidates to participate, making sure that we have robust participation in all that we do, and I think that diversity will come. If we're not happy with the diversity that we're getting at this level, we need to go deeper and do more work in other layers of the organization. I'm committed to that. In 9 months we have an election, and two seats are going to be open. You can commit to that. And what we need to do today, I'm convinced, is get to that term sheet and get the MLNP deal done, and I feel like we made a good vote today.
Well, I don't really want to follow that. I'll let Lee follow that.
No, welcome aboard, Harold. You know, I think diversity is great. I think we've proven tonight that we are a diverse group, and everybody's got their opinions, and everybody asks the questions, and people aren't shunned for doing that. So I think that this is a great board. I think you'll enjoy it. We've got a lot of great opportunities in front of us, and there's a lot of challenges ahead of us. So welcome aboard, and I look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Lee. You know, if I may, when I look at this board, and I totally respect, Jim, I respect your comments regarding diversity. That was one of the questions that you asked in an interview, as a matter of fact. I do see a diverse board. Maybe it's not diverse across all of the membership, but it is diverse in different thoughts, and I do see the ability to speak up about it at this board. I truly think that we can work together. I think that as long as we respect each other's opinions, we come to the best decision. And that's really what a board is supposed to be. And I look forward to working with all of you. I'm not going to agree with some of your positions or some of yours. But I think that if we can work together respectfully, we can come to the right decisions that are the best decisions for Chugach and its members. And I commit to doing that, being a part of that in a very positive way.
Thank you. Well, I would like to say congratulations and welcome aboard. I look forward to working with you as well. We've got a lot of work in front of us. You came in at a very, pretty much a really crazy time. So I hope you're ready to drink from a fire hose and jump right in, because we definitely could use some help on lots of different things. The staff is working very, very hard. The issues are really complicated. You came in at a pretty wild time. I appreciate everybody's efforts tonight. We had a lot of different things. Harry, I thought we had tonight was
was right down your alley for the renewable stuff. I totally appreciated Mitchell coming in and giving his thoughts. I thought they were super interesting. I do think that the board, you know, when a member comes in and takes all that time and effort to ask us to consider doing something, I think we should talk about it and how we can harness, you know, the initiatives that the members are looking at. I don't know whether it's committees or whatever, but at the next board meeting, I think we should have a discussion about that. I thought the Kalutna battery project was really interesting. You know, I have no idea from a super conceptual perspective if it's ever going to get any legs, you know, with a price tag. But, you know, all these ideas, they start somewhere. So I think we can push these things forward in different forms and different avenues. So just thanks, everybody, for your patience tonight. And I am pretty sure this is now the longest meeting I have run. So with that, I will take a motion to adjourn.
Okay.
All those in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Aye. All right.